Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the sixth canto, third chapter, entitled Yamaraj Instructs His Messengers. Text number 13. Yo nam abhirvachi janam nijayam. Padnati tantriyam eva dam abhirgaha. Yasmai balim ta ime nama karma. Nibandha badash takita vahanti. Yo nam abhirvachi janam nijayam. Padnati tantriyam eva dam abhirgaha. Yasmai balim ta ime nama karma. Nibandha badash takita vahanti. Avirvati janam nijayam. Nibandhi tantriyam evadam abhirgaha. Yasmai valintai me nama karma. Andavara shakitanti. Chidanam nijayam. Adnanti tantyam evadama birga. Yasmai valintai me nama karma. Matajis. Yo nama birpati danam vijayam. Padnati tantriyam eva nama virkaha. Ismai balintai me nama karma. Nibandha bara shakita vahanti. Yo nama virvati danam nijayam. Adnati tantriyam eva dama birga. Yasmai valintai me nama karma. Nibandha bhada shakita vahanti. Yo nama birvati danam nidayam. Nibandhi tantriyam eva dama birga. Nismai balintai me nama karma. Ebanda bara shakita vahanti. Yaha, he who, nama bihi, by different names, vachi, to the Vedic language, janam, all people, nijayam, which has emanated from himself, badnati, binds, tantriyam, to a rope, eva, like, tamavihi, by cords, kaha, bowls, yasmai, unto whom, palim, a small presentation of taxes, te, all of them, Ime, these nama karma of names and different activities, nibandha, by the obligations, paraha, bound, chakitaha, being fearful, bahanti, carry. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as the driver of a bullock cart ties ropes through the nostrils of his bulls to control them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of His words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of the distinct orders of human society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. In fear, the members of these orders all worship the Supreme Lord by offering Him presentations according to their respective activities. Purport. In this material world, everyone is conditioned, regardless of who he is. One may be a human being, a demigod, or an animal, tree or plant, but everything is controlled by the laws of nature. And behind this natural control is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 9:10, wherein Krishna says, Mayadyakshena prakritik suyate sacharacharam. The material nature is working under my direction and producing all moving and non-moving beings. Thus Krishna is behind the natural machine, which works under His control. Apart from other living entities, the living being in the human form of body is systematically controlled by the Vedic injunctions in terms of divisions of varna and ashrama. A human being is expected to follow the rules and regulations of the varna and ashram. Otherwise, he cannot escape punishment by Yamaraj. The point is that every human being is expected to elevate himself to the position of a Brahmana, the most intelligent man. Then one must transcend that position to become a Vaishnava. This is the perfection of life. The Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra can elevate themselves by worshipping the Lord according to their activities. Sve sve karmanya piratak sang siddhing labhate naraha. The divisions of varna and ashrama are necessary to ensure the proper execution of duties and peaceful existence for everyone. But everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord, who is all-pervading. Yena sarvam idam tatam. The Supreme Lord exists vertically and horizontally, O tang protam. And therefore, if one follows the Vedic injunctions by worshipping the Supreme Lord according to one's ability, his life will be perfect. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13, Atak pumbir dvija sreshta varnashrama vipagashaha swanushtitasya dharmasya samsedin haritoshanam. O best among the twice-born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, dharma, according to caste divisions and order of life, is to please Lord Hari. The Varnashrama institution offers the perfect process for making one eligible to return home back to Godhead, because the aim of every Varna and Ashrama is to please the Supreme Lord. One can please the Lord under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, and if one does so, his life is perfect. The Supreme Lord is worshipable, and everyone worships Him directly or indirectly. Those who worship Him directly get the results of liberation quickly, whereas the liberation of those who serve Him indirectly is delayed. The words Namabir Vachi are very important. In the Varnashram institution, there are different names, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasi. The Vak, or Vedic injunctions, give directions for all these divisions. Everyone is expected to offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord and perform duties as indicated in the Vedas. Om Gyana Timurandasya Ganajana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Mahang Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Srimate Paladananda Swami Tony. Mahang Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Jiramani. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Charni Nivishesha Shunivadi Pashtyatya Adesha Charni. So in this connection, I found it very interesting that Yamaraj uses the word chakita. Chakita means being fearful. So most people in this material world are very fearful. They're fearful of pain, or fearful of punishment, or fearful of losing something that they have. These are the three main fears, or the consequences of not having the basic necessities of existence. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 11:32, Kalosmi loka kasya krit pravrido. Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds. And I have come here to destroy all people. So this can be a little bit fearful. And everybody recognizes this. Everybody recognizes that this is a temporary place. We don't belong here. And just as we came into, our body came into existence, it will similarly go out of existence. And nobody wants to acknowledge this fact. I remember even as a little child, I was 4 years old, and I was asking my parents, what was I before I was born, and what will I become once I'm dead? And they became very fearful about those kinds of questions. They told me not to ask those things, because they didn't want to have to face the fact of their own mortality. Krishna says it so many times about how this, you know, the difference between matter and spirit, how matter is born, it grows, it creates some byproducts, it dwindles, and then it finally dies. And we can see this practically also within this very lifetime. We can see how our parents are older than us, how their parents are even older. And then finally, there's death. And we can see how as we grow and this body matures and ages, it starts breaking down. We start having problems, diseases, difficulties. So this is a great fear. And another fear is the fear of just basic survival. Many people are hesitant to take up spiritual life because they think, well, what will happen to me if I surrender? The fear there is that somehow my needs won't be met unless I personally take care of them. But Prabhupada points out that Krishna is even maintaining all the hundreds of thousands of elephants that are in Africa. Each elephant eats so many pounds of food every single day for every meal. I forget the exact amount, but it's a ridiculous amount of food that they eat. And yet they're living in the wild, and they don't have to worry about where their hundreds of pounds of food is going to come from every day. So if Krishna can supply hundreds of pounds of food for elephants, what to speak of, you know, as Prabhupada said, two chapatis and a glass of tea. Even the richest person, you know, he can only eat a few chapatis. So what's a few chapatis compared to a few hundred pounds of food? So the fear is that if I surrender everything, if I give everything, then nothing will be left for me. How will I maintain myself? Because there's no faith. There's no faith in Krishna. There's no faith that Krishna actually exists and that Krishna is the maintainer and the proprietor of everything. Then another fear, fear of retribution or punishment. Fear of making mistakes and then what will happen because of those mistakes. So all these different fears, they drive people in their material existence to do so many things. And oftentimes the fear of lack of necessity drives people to commit sinful activities. Because they're so fearful of their situation of survival that they transgress the laws of the Vedas, the injunctions of the Vedas, simply to see to their temporary perceived well-being, but without fully realizing that they will be held accountable. So that's why it's recommended in the Vedas, and Krishna personally recommends it directly many, many times, what to do. Yamaraj also mentions it in this verse about acting according to the distinct orders of human society. Prabhupada actually describes these in the Bhagavad Gita as our duty. Sometimes people think that it's a little vague. Well, what does this mean? What is our duty? What is it that we have to perform? But this is actually very elaborately presented in the Bhagavad Gita in many chapters, in chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 18. So in chapter 18, Krishna says, "By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions." This is a very important point. It's a point that we all have to fully grasp because it has big implications. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains how a Vaishya may be engaged in his activities, and a Vaishya may say, "Oh, for you I make no profit." But that's a lie. Prabhupada explains that for Vaishyas it's impossible to carry on business dealings without lying. So does that mean that a Vaishya should cease his activities because it's not good to lie? Prabhupada says no. Prabhupada says that without doing so, a merchant cannot exist. And he goes further to say that there's also no sin incurred because of that, because that's operating according to his own duty. Prabhupada says, whether one is a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra doesn't matter. If he serves by his work the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even Brahmanas who perform different types of sacrifice sometimes must kill animals because sometimes animals are sacrificed in such ceremonies. Similarly, if a Kshatriya in his own occupation kills an enemy, there is no sin incurred. The conclusion is that everyone should engage according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired, and he should decide to work only to serve the supreme cause of the Supreme Lord. Then in the second chapter, Krishna says, "Do thou fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by doing so, you shall never incur sin." This is further emphasizing that point, that by engaging according to our propensity, to the modes of material nature that we've acquired in this life, and according to the injunction of the Vedas, we don't incur any sin, any sinful reactions according to those activities. Krishna elaborates further in the second chapter. "You have the right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty." So Prabhupada further elucidates here in the purport. He says that there are three considerations here: prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. Prescribed duties are activities enjoined in terms of one's acquired modes of material nature. Capricious work means actions without sanction of authority, and inaction means not performing one's prescribed duties. Krishna goes further. Perform your duty equipoise, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachments to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Then in the third chapter, Krishna goes even further to explain about the nature of work. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them, saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice, thus established by the Vedas, certainly leads a life full of sin, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. Such a person lives in vain. But one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend upon any other living being. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. So this is just kind of a summary of everything, not everything, but most of the things that Krishna says specifically in reference to working according to your duty or your dharma in the Bhagavad Gita. And this is very instructive for us also, because this is the position we all find ourselves in. So everyone has to act, and so it's very important that we act according to our nature. Everyone has a different nature. And it really takes a degree of renunciation to be able to act according to that nature. Because oftentimes, devotees may feel that, well, I'm engaged in transcendental service. This is above the three modes of material nature. It's above the whole Varnashram institution. But as Krishna said in 3:18, that such a self-realized man, although he has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of prescribed duties, he also has no reason not to perform such work. So that's why Krishna says later on, a few texts later in 3:21, whatever actions a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. And then Krishna goes further in the third chapter to explain that that's why he himself also exemplifies these sorts of behavior, these sorts of activities. Because if he himself doesn't exemplify what is supposed to be done, then all the world will certainly be led to ruination. So it's interesting because oftentimes we have certain hankerings and lamentations, certain desires. All the way through the process of anarthanivritti, people will still be tempted by all these different things. Still be tempted to act according to speculative means. Once one achieves the point of nishta, then one will no longer be fooled by those different speculations of the mind. It doesn't mean that while one is situated in nishta, or firm faith, that those temptations of the mind don't exist. That's not the case. It's just that at that point, one is so firmly fixed in one's prescribed duties, especially activities in Krishna consciousness, that one will no longer be persuaded by the material energy to do otherwise. So there was one great saint during the time of Lord Tukaram. He was actually a disciple of, of Lord Chaitanya. His name was Tukaram. And he was actually a disciple of Lord Chaitanya. He was from Maharashtra. And this was one of the things that he taught. He taught that everyone should act according to their duty. And in their daily activities, they can find Krishna. They can become self-realized, even in ordinary daily activities. And so this is also the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For example, when the Korma Brahman, Lord Chaitanya came through, I think it was Kormadesh. He came across this one Brahman, and this Brahman was very enraptured by Lord Chaitanya and his activities. And he wanted to drop everything and just follow Lord Chaitanya around. But Lord Chaitanya said, no, you should stay here situated as you are and simply engage in Krishna's service, engage in Krishna conscious activities. Have kirtan, read the Bhagavatam, chant the holy names, and tell everyone you meet about Krishna. And in this way, you will achieve perfection. So it's very important that we don't have to do anything super spectacular. We don't have to become some like super person, you know, flying around the world, saving everyone to become Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness is a private affair between you and Krishna that happens within the heart. It's not determined based upon what external activities we're performing. Because we can become Krishna conscious in any circumstances, in any situation, no matter what it is that we're doing. Whether we're engaging in trade, having to lie to people, oh, for you I make no profit. Whether we're having to administer justice, run the state. Whether we're having to act as a Brahmin, performing sacrifices, or even as a Shudra, doing hard manual labor. It doesn't matter which of these different varnas. It also doesn't matter which of the ashrams we're situated in. The point is we have to be situated in one of these. And so we should be happily situated in whatever varna and ashram we find ourselves and simply execute the duties of Krishna consciousness. It's just like passing time. You have something to do based upon the situation that your body was born into. And you're just marking time until you leave this body. And during the time while you're engaged in activities with this particular body, you have to engage this body according to its own nature in activities for Krishna's pleasure. So an important point that Prabhupada made in the purport for today's verse, he says that one can worship the Lord directly or indirectly. And those who worship Him directly get the results of liberation very quickly, whereas liberation of those who serve Him indirectly is delayed. So this ties in with the whole idea, the whole concept of Niyamagraha. On the one hand, you have those who fail to perform their prescribed duties. You know, the rules and regulations, they fail to operate according to those. On the other hand, you have those who follow the rules and regulations or their prescribed duty without any understanding of the purpose behind those activities. So somebody who engages in his duty without any understanding of the purpose behind those duties, their liberation, as Prabhupada mentions here, will be delayed because they're serving Krishna indirectly. They're serving Krishna without any knowledge, and they're simply doing the activity just for the sake of the activity. Whereas those who worship Krishna directly, they get this liberation very quickly. So whether you be a Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahmin, or Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Nyas, if you're engaging in these different prescribed duties with full knowledge that I'm doing this as a sacrifice for Krishna, and then being satisfied in that sacrifice, not hankering to be something else, thinking, oh, well, if only I was in this position, then my life would be perfect. If only I was rich, or if only I was in charge, or if only I was, you know, privately doing my meditations in some secluded place in the mountains, or if only I had a good job. Rather, we have to be satisfied with whatever it is, whatever situation we find ourselves in. And then just act according to those conditions, realizing that this body is just a temporary thing. It's a temporary vehicle. Just like if you're born into a poor family, you have to be satisfied being poor. It's not proper to hanker to be something that you're not. Go through so much precious, unnecessary endeavor for something material. Work hard your whole life like an ass simply to acquire a few extra pennies. Because what's that going to do for you? Nothing. Your whole life wasted simply for something that you'll lose when you die. And that's the actual situation of everyone here. We're all going to die. And we have to really realize this. We have to think about this. You know, death isn't something to be brushed off to the side. Death is something that everyone should meditate upon, should think about. Because it helps us realize that we're not this body. And that all these activities pertaining to this body are very insignificant. And so what is it that I'm doing? What is it that's so important that I'm doing right now? How is this more important than Krishna consciousness? Or engaging in my prescribed duties as a sacrifice to Krishna? And so then when one becomes renounced in their daily life and becomes satisfied with simply acting according to their acquired modes of nature, then all stress and all anxiety will be alleviated. One can actually become peaceful and happy, satisfied in Krishna's service, rather than hankering for another material body and another birth and another death, and extending this cycle of suffering. So I think I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Bakunida Prabhu.
Thank you for the nice class, as always. Srila Prabhupada's purport is emphasizing, it seems, Varnashram Dharma, which is not really explicit in the verse. And your class, on the other hand, is emphasizing the principle of fear, which is explicit in the verse, but not in the purport. So I'm wondering if you can say a few things about how we may be fearful of Varnashram.
Well, thank you. That's a very nice point. People become fearful of Varnashram because it means that you have to act according to authority. You have to act according to the authority of the material nature. You have to act according to the authority of the Vedas. You have to act according to the authority of the spiritual master. And acting according to authority impedes and hinders our perceived sense of independence. And it also impedes our perceived sense of self-reliance. Because in modern society, that's what the whole focus is. The focus is to be a self-sufficient person. Everyone equal and independent. No dependence upon anyone else for anything. And because of that perceived sense or that false sense of independence, it carries with it a tremendous degree of fear. Because it's me against the whole world. And so when you're having difficult times, when you're going through, very dark experiences, it's like being alone in the dark. And you're crying out for help and there's nobody to hear you. So it's just a lone cry in the dark, and all you hear is just like the howling wind going by your ears. It can be a very depressing, state of consciousness. To the point where that isolation, that loneliness goes so far that people even commit suicide. Even though they're around so many people, they may have so many friends, but yet they just give up this body. Like just recently, yesterday, the Shraddha ceremony was performed for that Mataji that was helping paint the partition outside. She was feeling extremely depressed, and so she committed suicide. And this is one of the repercussions of this false sense of independence. This false sense of doing everything according to my whims, according to my desires. And so when one actually surrenders and realizes that by operating according to authority, then I will actually be situated properly. Then we'll actually have less fear than we do presently. It's just that due to conditioning, due to the force of society, the nature of society around us, it comes with so many false expectations of independence and acting according to our own whims. And that's also what gets us further entangled into material existence. So like, say for instance, somebody may be on the streets, and they're fearful. How will I maintain this body? So what do? They steal. They go shoplifting. Then they get caught. They get arrested by the police. And then they're fearful because they don't know what sort of punishment awaits them. They don't know if they'll go to jail. They don't know if they do go to jail, what will happen to them in jail. It's just full of fearfulness.
Archita Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Just to add a little something to your answer, as usual, Prabhupada gives the answer in the purport as well. The problem was stated there, and the answer was also stated. The answer is become a Vaishnava. Because in this life, you may not have time to be properly trained as a Brahmana or as a Kshatriya or whatever. But if you go immediately to the Vaishnava platform, which means acting according to the instruction of Krishna coming down in disciplic succession and in the authority chain that we have like in ISKCON. If you do that, if you agree to do that, then you don't have to go through this gradual process of gradually being trained. I mean, yes, training will be there, how to perform, you know, RT, how to do this and that. Some training will be there. But if you immediately agree to do whatever Krishna says coming down through disciplic succession, then you immediately rise above that, all of that mess. Because most of us, all of us, we're Varna Shankara. You don't know. Some days you feel brahminical, some days you're less than Shudra. You don't have time to be trained properly in this life. Like you said, death is hanging around the corner for all of us. So if you just immediately agree to be a Vaishnava, do whatever the spiritual master and Krishna asks you to do, then you're immediately above all of that. That's the whole point. That's what Prabhupada is saying. Become a Vaishnava and you're beyond this, all of this other stuff. Otherwise, it's very difficult. We're all, again, Varna Shankara. By the time you properly decide which Varna, or somebody tells you which Varna you should go for, and you get trained for 6 months, and you say, I don't want to be I don't want to be a Vaishnava. I want to be a Kshatriya. And it just becomes a whole mess. Immediately agree to be a Vaishnava, and everything is solved.
Yes, that's true. But also, even when one is a Vaishnava, one still has to engage in activities. One still has to act. And so everyone has natural propensities, whether or not we're properly trained as a Vaishya, as a Shudra, as a Kshatriya, or even as a Brahmin, we'll still have natural propensities. And these propensities are according to the modes of nature that we've acquired upon birth. And this is what's being talked about by Krishna and by Prabhupada in the Gita, is that we have to act according to these modes of nature as a Vaishnava. So just because we're a Vaishnava doesn't mean that we can't act, that all of a sudden, we can just,
No, that's not what I'm saying.
I know, but I'm just...
Act according to the instructions that you're given, which means...
Yes, but not all the time does your guru tell you, do this, engage in this livelihood.
Yeah, but sometimes we think, all right, I'm a Brahmana, therefore if the temple authorities ask me to help sweep the street for a festival, I can't do that because that's not brahminical activity. No, that's what we shouldn't do. Then you're not a Vaishnava anymore. A Vaishnava means whatever order comes down from Krishna, you do it. That's what a Vaishnava means.
Yes,
it means
also say you're living outside.
It's beyond your...
Say you're living outside, you have to maintain your griha. You should be satisfied with whatever job comes easily and that facilitates your Krishna consciousness. You know, it's not that, I'm just working as a bagger, a grocery bagger in some store. Therefore, I have to go through all this endeavor to get some better job or, whatever. We should do what comes naturally, what comes easily, without over-endeavor, and be Krishna conscious while we're doing it. So I appreciate your point. That is very important, especially here in the temple environment. But also at the same time, out in the material world, you're not going to be having somebody telling you what you should be doing on a daily basis if you're living outside. So both points should be considered. Last point?
Yeah, just a comment off of his point. This kind of disagreement that we're seeing here maybe is one demonstration of how Varnashram is a fearful prospect for many of us. but I just want to mention that in Prabhupada's statement, he's mentioning direct and indirect ways of engaging in Krishna service. One way to interpret that, and I want to be cautious about interpretation, is that Varnashram itself is an indirect way of serving Krishna, whereas Raghunuga Bhakti, for example, is a direct way of serving Krishna. And both of those are very fearful areas to enter because they're necessarily subjective in many ways and causes a lot of strife.
Jai. Thank you. Rantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.